Welcome to episode 461 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have a grand conversation with American rock drummer, among other things, Bob Burt. We talk with Bob from his home in Hoboken, New Jersey. We discuss his early days and how he got into music, silk screening, working with the entourage of Andy Warhol, his book, I'm Just the Drummer, being on the road, the creative process, about his days in the village, touring the South, the Midwest, Europe, and an upcoming tour he's getting ready for as well. And making the best music you can possibly make, true to yourself. A grand conversation with Bob Burt this go-round. We have an EW essay titled Glam. We share an article that is published in the February 2022 edition of Harper's Magazine titled Why Yachting Families Make Great Climate Caretakers. And we have a poem called Short Pier. All of this, of course, will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. And I should add that most of those tunes for this episode were suggested to me by Bob Burt. All right. So nice to be with you. Let's get to it then. Episode 461 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Oh,
glam. Pussy galore. Who needs anything more? Drums for Sonic Youth. Pretty big for a kid, happily not from Duluth, but instead from Jersey, born in Passaic. Isn't that where the great American poet William Carlos Williams slayed it? And the beat goes on, working with Andy Warhol's circle of artistic endeavor. An early time on the New York City scene, before the book and underground BB Gun fanzine. Before Lydia Lunch spoke her words in front of his backbeat bass drum and tight snare. Hi-hat, cymbal, beware. Psst, psst, psst. Hoboken and soft-spoken has been home for a while. Sitting on the couch, feeling the daylight and star-bright nights through the window with natural style. A sixth decade on this planet. The Village, Moscow, some whiskey-soaked stage in Alabama, to a mid-size suburban city near Chicago. He's just a drummer with a camera. We talk of the passing of time and musical icons inside the scene. The Ukraine and screaming trees. How life is but a dream. Old loves and Burt's Bees in my breast pocket for chapped lips. And strong hearts beating faster while scraping the sides of cars with a church key in this left hand, as alabaster hips move steadfast and stalwart in the rhythm of a master, through a headset, listening to his band, imploring in song for us to kill our idols faster and faster, and modest royalty checks keep pacing themselves into a less austere balance sheet than once was the predicament. American rock drummer, artist man to the core. Soon again in April, on the road for a nationwide tour. Weeks of soup du jour for supper, wearing worn leather pants with red down the sides, otherwise the color of natural maple. Symbolize beautiful, the soul-searching romance of this wide open country fable.
The end of the world. Hello.
Hello, Bob Burt. Is that you?
This is me.
Well, it's great to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tour, EW Conundrum here. Broadcast at Radio Free Brooklyn, WFTE Radio, and radio stations all across the continent via the Pacifica Network. It's good to have you on.
Thank you.
And before we get started, let me give the folks some background information. We're talking with, again, Bob Burt. He's an American rock drummer who has played with several extraordinary groups, including Sonic Youth, Pussy Galore, and Lydia Lunch, to name just a few. He's a publisher of a coveted fanzine. I don't think it's still in print, but it's still sought after, called BB Gun. And author of an acclaimed book titled I'm Just the Drummer. He's presently gearing up for a tour starting in a couple of months. And I believe we're talking with you from your home in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Yes, that's true.
All right, excellent. So thank you so much, Bob, for being on the show. How's it going today?
Well, I'm watching TV and watching the war start. And I just got a phone call 2 minutes before you called telling me that Mark Lanegan died, which is very upsetting. But other than that, I'm doing okay.
I'm sorry to hear about your loss. I didn't catch the name. You cut out there for a sec.
Mark Lanegan. He's a very famous musician. He was the singer of the Screaming Trees.
Oh, yeah.
And he also wrote an amazing book, you know, and the news just broke, I guess, on Facebook like 5 minutes ago.
Wow.
So it's just like, you know, and that, you know, and just like 2 days ago, we lost Dallas Good from the Sadies, a really close friend and a really talented musician and, you know, great band from Toronto. So, you know, 2022
is coming in terribly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm sorry about your losses. And I guess the war you're talking about, have they invaded the Ukraine?
Yes.
Yeah? Wow. Bob Burt, you're like our CNN correspondent or something. Thank you for the info. I mean, it's important to know these things. And again, my respect to you and to your friends that have passed.
Sorry about the interview with a bunch of bad news, but otherwise.
Well, you know, that's life, isn't it? You know, and I guess it feeds the art too, right?
Totally.
So, you know, let's get started, I guess, from the beginning, right? You know, where were you born? Are you from Hoboken originally?
No, I grew up in Clifton, New Jersey, which is like 10 minutes outside of New York City. So, you know, which was, you know, even though it was so close to New York City, it was, you know, suburban, whole different kind of world. But, you know, even as a young kid, you know, my parents would take me into New York. And so I was aware of New York City, you know, from an early age. And I, you know, I grew up in the, basically in the 60s. And so, you know, I got into, you know, music, just, you know, those were the days of a little transistor radio listening to Top 40 AM. And, you know, I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan when I was 8 years old. And as the 60s went on, you know, I was getting more into the psychedelic hippie kind of scene, and
must have been fun.
Well, yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think you and I are about a decade apart. I think you're about 10 years older than me, and I've always admired the work you've done, and I'm so happy again to have you on this show. So it's interesting to hear how you got into it. You couldn't help but get into it, it seems to me. You were surrounded by a great culture in our country at that point in time, and you were close to one of the best cities in the world, which must have radiated energy towards you. When was the first time you got into a band? Were you in high school?
Well, no. You know, after the whole, you know, seeing the Beatles on TV and the whole British invasion, you know, I got into music, and I took drum lessons for a year when I was 12 years old. And, you know, and I had, like, you know, a cruddy old drum kit in the basement. And, you know, when I was 13 or 14, I had some, you know, kids over, and we would try to play songs like Dirty Water by the Sandhills or whatever, you know, or Cream or whatever, you know, but it never got out of the basement. And then when I moved out of my house at 18, I just stopped playing. The professional musician was the farthest thing from my mind. I was more into art. And, you know, when I was in high school, that was like the early 70s. So things like Ziggy Stardust by David Bowie and Lou Reed's Transformer and Roxy Music, I started going more towards a glam kind of fan. And I started going to concerts very early because, you know, right in the next town of Passaic, which was actually where I was born, in the hospital of Passaic, the Capitol Theater opened up, and, you know, so we, you know, would go see shows there all the time. In fact, their opening night was my very first date at the age of 16, and the bill was the Jay Giles Band, Humble Pie.
Wow.
And, and then as time, you know, and right around that time, the drinking age in New Jersey was 18, but if you went into New York City, you know, no one cared. I mean, they didn't ask for any ID. You could walk into a liquor store and be 10 years old and they would sell you a bottle. But, started going to clubs. I went to Max's Kansas City first with a bunch of high school friends, and, you know, we had fake IDs, and we went to a show there, and they didn't ask for the IDs. And first thing I thought was, oh man, I could have come here last week and saw the Velvet Underground. and I went to, I saw the New York Dolls there around the same time when I was in high school, right when their first album came out. And I started to go see them a bunch of stuff, but I still was just more interested in art. So I wasn't, you know, I was a big music fan, went to lots of shows, bought records, after I got out of high school, when I was in high school, we went on our art class went on a field trip to the Whitney Museum to see the Andy Warhol retrospect. Andy Warhol, who just died yesterday, today, actually, he died today, February 22nd, 1987.
Wow, an anniversary. Wow.
Yeah, 35 years ago. So, after high school, I went to a school of visual arts and took a lot of classes, and I learned how to be a silkscreen printer. And so I actually started getting jobs as a fine art silkscreen printer, and I actually ended up working for, like, doing Andy Warhol's artwork.
Wow.
Right up until when he died in 1987.
You worked with him?
I didn't work with him, we handed to him to sign it.
you made a silkscreen of one of his prints, and then you handed it to him to sign it.
Well, yeah, no, we did tons of editions, print editions, you know, paintings, portraits. All those paintings with the camouflage background, we did all those. The Last Supper paintings, which were gigantic, you know, we did those. And, you know, I worked for, like, his right-hand man, a guy named Rupert Smith.
Wow, that's excellent. You must have been hanging out in a lot of cool scenes.
Well, yeah, because by that point I was already, you know, I joined Sonic Youth in 1982, so I played with them from like 82 through 85, and then I quit, and then I joined Pussy Galore in 1986. So it's like the first half of the 80s I was in Sonic Youth, and the second half of the 80s I was in Pussy Galore. And, you know, I went to, you know, we're touring Europe all the time, so it was just like, you know, I wasn't even that good of a musician because I was just kind of picking things up again. But, you know, I ended up in the right places at the right time, I guess. And, you know.
Was it always the drums, always percussion that you were interested in? Or
yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I could not. For the life of me, every time I even attempted to try to learn something on guitar, I just can't do it.
Yeah, it's hard. I know. I hear you.
Yeah.
So when you got with Sonic Youth, I guess that was the first big band you were in.
Yeah, but they weren't big. They weren't big until like 6 years after I left. But you know, they were just like, they had been together like 3 or 4 months, I guess. And they made their first EP, and the drummer was named Richard Etson, who later became a film star. He was in Jim Jarmusch's Stranger Than Paradise, and he was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. and so he actually quit Sonic Youth to play trumpet in this other band called Conk, you know, who were kind of like a Latin-fused rhythm band, you know, from the East Village back then. So, yeah, so that's, you know, I joined Sonic Youth really early on. And I went on there, you know, we were writing the songs that ended up on their first album, Confusion is Sex. Oh, yeah, they fired me for a bit, and they hired Jim Skolounos, who was a drummer in Teenage Jesus and the Jerks. No, he was a bass player in Teenage Jesus and the Jerks and Eight Eyes Spy. And then he was in the Cramps for a while. And he's currently, he has probably 20 years, has been playing with Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. And so he didn't last long in Sonic Youth. And then I had been rehearsing with other people and got a lot technically better on the drums. And I went back and rejoined them. And then, you know, we started going to Europe, you know, for like really, you know, one of the first indie rock bands from America to really kind of paved the way for touring Europe, you know, which was kind of crazy back then. It was like the first tour we did of Europe, we didn't even have a van. We like were traveling around with Euro passes and like 13 guitars. it was crazy.
So your first tour was Europe, not the United States.
The first tours were with Sonic Youth and Swans, and we went down south, you know, in November of 82, I believe. And we played a handful of shows in the south, and then we came back and went out to the Midwest. And that was known as the Savage Blunder Tours. And those were the very first tours. I mean, I was on tour like within like a month or two of joining them. And, you know, I haven't stopped since, pretty much.
The Savage Blunder Tours, is that a joke you guys came up with because it was not that fun?
Yeah, it was, well, you know, that was like, you know, before we even left, because it was just kind of like, you know, what are we doing? Each band had an EP, and no one knew who we were, and we were going like down south where like, we knew they weren't going to be receptive to this extremely loud, noisy, you know, New York City art rock. But it was, you know, it was quite an experience. It was like 10 people in a van with a U-Haul. I was the only one that didn't smoke cigarettes. It was like traveling around in a cloud. Yeah, it was rough, but, you know, it's... It was an experience I'll never forget.
A lot of material for your book and for the fanzine, I suppose, too.
Yeah, it was, because you know, I took a camera with me, which I don't think many other people did. So I had all these photos from the first tour, and you know, they're all, you know, all this stuff is in my book called "I'm Just a Drummer" on Hozak Books. And there's also a lot of things in the book of interviews that I did that were in my fanzine, BB Gun, that was started in the 90s.
Yeah, you know, that's, people still are looking for that. I guess it's hard to come by, the fanzine.
Yeah, I mean, we were trying to do one issue a year, and we did 7 issues altogether. And I think the last issue was in 2004.
And you worked...
You know, they were...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. They were, you know, started off smaller runs, but then as it went on, like the last couple issues were like, you know, 5,000 copies, and we got picked up by, you know, Tower Records and a couple other distributors. And there was a fanzine store in Manhattan called See Here, and they would sell a ton of them, you know.
And you say we. Who did you publish it with?
My wife, Linda, who passed away 10 years ago. But she is the reason I got into music, because I was silkscreen printing in New York, and I saw this little ad on the back of the cover of the Village Voice that said punk rock art wanted. So I went over to this gallery that was down the street on Wooster Street. This is back when, you know, Soho was really cool. There was art galleries and record stores. And so I got involved in this group show that also included Joey Ramone and a bunch of people. And that's, so I got involved in this gallery, and that's where I met Linda Wolf, who, you know, she, our first date was January 1st, 1980. And then after I was living on the Upper West Side, and she was living in Jersey City. And so we decided we were going to live together. So we compromised, and we ended up moving to Hoboken. And that's where I've been ever since. But while we were here, like the first year we were here, one night we were at this club. It wasn't Maxwell's. It was a different place. And we're seeing a couple bands play, of friends of ours, and one of the bands didn't show up. And so someone said, "Hey, does anyone know a drummer?" And Linda was like, "Yeah, Bob played." Meanwhile, I hadn't played it in forever, but I got up on stage and started jamming with these people, and that turned into my first band. And then I just kept going from there. I said, this is a lot more fun than painting in my room. I'm meeting a lot more people, you know. And
excellent.
Yeah. And, yeah. So if I never moved to Hoboken, if I never met her, like, who knows where I'd be now.
I know. It's amazing. I sit back sometimes and think about those kinds of things. Like, you know, one different, you know, direction, step, you know, decision, and your whole life could be completely different. It's mind-blowing, really.
Yeah, totally.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest. And let's talk about the creative process a bit. You know, when you're in Sonic Youth or Pussy Galore or Lydia Lunch, how much involved are you in the writing of the songs, the lyrics, the music?
Well, with Sonic Youth, it was great because it was a democracy. So we would all, you know, work out the songs together, and then someone would decide who would, you know, wanted to sing it. They would write the lyrics. But it was great because now, you know, how many ever, you know, 40 years later or whatever it is, you know, I'm still getting, you know, royalties from Sonic Youth. In fact, the very first full album I ever played on was Bad Moon Rising by Sonic Youth. And that's, you know, that album still has legs.
Yeah.
I'm still getting money from it. It's still, people are still buying it. A lot of people, you know, tell me it's their favorite Sonic Youth record. And then it's different. I mean, Pussy Galore was a lot different. For one thing, I was playing a drum kit that was made out of metal. You know, it was like a bass drum with a car gas tank on top. And you know, that Pussy Galore, as the hit makers are now, you know, it's totally John Spencer's vision. So, you know, but, you know, of course, it's, you know, I have my style of playing, and, you know, so, you know, it definitely is part of the creative process. And, you know, with Lydia Lunch, we're doing a retrospective of her music career, and even though we're playing songs that she has had over the last 40 years with many different projects, you know, we kind of turned it into our own sound. And we just played a show the other night in New York, and it went great. You know, it's a killer live band.
Yeah, I saw some video of that show. I don't know if it may be on Instagram, and it was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that the tour that you, when we were emailing back and forth to each other, is that the tour you were alluding to? Is that with Lydia Rush?
The tour I'm alluding to is before the pandemic, I joined, John Spencer made a solo record called Spencer Sings the Hits, and he had overdubbed all this metal percussion on it. So he asked me if I would be in the live band, and I really loved the album, so I said yes. And then we did, like, you know, 2018, 2019, we went around the world. We did, like, probably close to 200 shows. And then, you know, it was a little difficult, you know, doing stuff because, you know, all four members are in four different states. And so, you know, once the pandemic hit, all our plans, we had, like, at least three tours canceled, a recording session canceled. But then last year in July, we went out to Michigan and we recorded a new album, and that's called Spencer Gets It Lit, and that's going to be released on April 1st, and then we're hitting the road on, like, April 11th is the first show in Buffalo. And it's like 26 shows in a row, like all over the U.S.
That sounds awesome. And what style of music would you say this album has?
It's pretty unique. I mean, it's definitely rock and roll. There's no denying that. But it's got, you know, metal percussion. We have Sam Toms, and now his ex-wife, who he has the band Quasi with, Janet Weiss, who's the drummer in the band Sleater-Kinney, amongst others, and she's now joined the band. So it's really unique because there's only one guitar, and then Sam plays all kinds of keyboards and synthesizers, and then we have, you know, Janet playing a regular drum kit and me off to the side playing a metal drum kit with hammers and rods.
Sounds awesome. And lyrically, when you're working with different bands, Sonic Youth, Pussy Galore, Lydia, and John Spencer, are the lyrics often important as the melody and the energy of the music to you, or are the lyrics more secondary?
Well, for me, if I'm playing the music, they're a little bit more secondary. But, you know, good lyrics and good music make a good song, and with Lydia Lunch especially, I mean, her lyrics are brilliant and stand up on their own. She's, you know, she's also a spoken word performer. At one point in between Sonic Youth and Pussy Galore, I started my own experimental band called Bewitched. Mm-hmm. And then in the early 90s, that actually became a band, and we made two albums, and I actually wrote the lyrics and sang, you know, and play drums, and so that was, you know, the most I ever had to do was, like, composing a song.
What was the name of that band? Was that Bewitched? What was it?
Yeah.
Bewitched.
Yep. And also, currently, apart from playing with Lydia Lunch and John Spencer, I have another band called the Wolf Manhattan Project, which is me, Kit Congo Powers from The Cramps and Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds and the Gun Club, and Nick Collins from Detroit, who's living in Brooklyn now, from the Dirt Bombs and the Gories. And our second album is about to come out, and that's a three-way collaboration. So we all, you know, write lyrics, sing them, and compose the music together.
Awesome. I mean, you are really productive. You don't stop. That's awesome.
Well, it seems that way, but, you know, look, right now I'm just laying here talking to you.
And I want to go back to I guess, for people that are just, some people are musicians and they get all of what I'm about to ask, but other people that listen to the show are not. And you're such a seasoned artist and musician. You've been around for a good number of years, played with, you're one of the greats, and you've played with the greats, and you continue to. I want to ask, like, what are you trying to accomplish with the music? You know, why do you do it?
You know, I'm not trying to accomplish anything. I mean, it's just like I got into it, and I luckily, you know, made the right choices of people to play with, I guess because I was pretty informed, you know. I knew who Sonic Youth were from the get-go because I used to read this magazine called New York Rocker, and I saw an article in there saying that Glenn Branca, the composer, was starting his own label to put out a band called Sonic Youth. And so when I saw their record in the store, you know, I bought it and I was onto it, you know, and then I went to see them a few times and they were just playing to, like, you know, friends basically at that point. And, you know, so I'm not trying to accomplish anything except, you know, living life to its fullest and enjoying, you know, what I do. I feel very grateful and very blessed that, you know, like I fell into this whole thing you know, it's taken me around the world several times, places I'd never dreamed I'd ever go. You know, with Lydia, we played in Moscow, we played in Brazil a bunch of times, and, you know, Australia. So I just feel very, very lucky. And, you know, it's not like I made a lot of money. I always had jobs.
You mean side jobs?
Yeah, I mean, lately I'm okay, but... So, I've done it all, from working in my father's liquor stores to working in record stores to working in factories. I'm definitely not like a trust fund kid or anything like that. So, you know, it's just like I managed to get by, and here I am, an old man playing all these rock bands.
An old man? Well, still not yet. It. You're not old yet.
Yeah.
I guess that's relative, right? You're living with more energy than many 30-year-olds. So I don't know.
I know. I know. I'm very, very, very grateful and very, you know, happy.
And for that, we're just about out of time for this go round. I'd love to talk with you again. I have so many things I'd like to ask you still. And you're a great conversationalist. Thank you for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. Again, we're talking to Bob Burt. Before we part, any, you know, for people who are listening, maybe some people that are a little younger than us who are thinking about, you know, pursuing their passion, their dreams in the arts, what would you say to them?
I would say just do it because you love to do it. Don't have any goals, like, you know, don't become a musician because you think you're going to be successful. Just try to create something original and unique, like, you know, take three bands that you love and take a little bit of everything, you know, that you want from them and create something of your own. But I think of a lot of bands that are successful are always a combination of a couple of things. Like with Sonic Youth, Lee Ranaldo and Thurston Moore, they were both like playing with experimental composers like Glenn Branca and Rhys Chatham, and they took what they learned from them and turned it into a rock band, which made it sound like unlike any other rock band. And, you know, the same with Pussy Galore. John was into you know, combining like really 60s garage rock, you know, from all these like Pebbles compilations and stuff, and then combining it with the industrial music of like Einstürzte Neubau and the Swans. And by doing that, he created a, you know, his own unique thing, and no one else sounded like Pussy Galore. And we were also, you know, kind of a love or hate band, but, you know, we were pretty noisy. We didn't have a bass player. You know, we had three guitars and a metal drum kit. But I just, my advice to anyone wanting to pursue music is, You know, just do your thing and enjoy it. And if success comes along, great. And if not, you know, it's better than to try to make, you know, crappy music that you think is going to sell. And you know, and it's really weird giving advice nowadays because, you know, of course, coming up, it was a whole other world. You know, there was no internet. We didn't have, like, you couldn't make an album in your bedroom and, like, you know, win a Grammy.
Yeah, Billie Eilish. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Well, so. Bob Burt, great American rock drummer, artist. It's so wonderful to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. Thanks for taking time out. Good luck on the tour.
Thank you.
And if people want to connect with you, I guess they could go on to Instagram. I think it's The Real Bob Burt, right? Or anywhere else they can check out what's going on with you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, and I'm pretty easily to contact.
Yeah, I know, and I appreciate it. You're a cool person. Thank you so much, sir. And hopefully we get a chance to talk again.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
And now, a little segment I'm going to call Theater of the Absurd. This is coming from the Harper's Magazine, edition February 2022. And I'm sure they published it with a little bit of, huh? Say what? Tongue-in-cheek attitude. It's under the heading Conservation Guide, Yacht to Know Better. And this article is from Why Yachting Families Make Great Climate Caretakers, It was published in November on the website Super Yacht Life. The average super yacht is estimated, by the way, to produce 7,020 tons of carbon dioxide each year. Here's the article. Theater of the Absurd. Those on board a yacht become a part of the ocean's ecosystem, and they are perfectly positioned to assist in the fight to protect our warming Earth. Here are five ways yacht-owning families can help our oceans heal. Number one, young yachting families can use their time at sea to bear witness to how the ocean is changing. Photographing marine life and accumulating ocean plastics is not just something adults can do. It is an activity for children, too. Number two, by ferrying scientists to and from remote locations, yachting families can take a hands-on approach to ocean conservation. By working with scientists at sea, children can develop a love of climate protection. Number three, families can sponsor and track their own sea creatures. My whale is called Luke, laughs Dr. Vienna Eleuteri. I adopted him when my nephew was born. Number four, when people are affected by hurricanes, super yacht Samaritans rush to the rescue. Organizations such as Yacht Aid Global are at the forefront of coordinating humanitarian efforts by super yachts all over the world. And number five, technology devised for state-of-the-art boats can be transferred to other maritime industries and put to good use even beyond the ocean. Super yacht owners invest in their futures, but in the future of the planet, too. Beep you.
Thank you.
short pier, steadfast at last. I just hit the stuff, imbibed immaculate. We spend a lifetime muddling through the disarray fed to us from the moment it became apparent we were here. How distinctly queer, an esoteric veneer, need to transcend beyond the stymieing fear, my dear. Episode 461 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I would like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Mr. Bob Burt, Harper's Magazine, and these musical artists, Thelonious Monk, Screaming Trees, Sonic Youth, Pussy Galore, Robert Berger, Lydia Lunch Retrovirus, Wolf Manhattan Project. Branford Marsalis and Terrence Blanchard, too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.